The Travelers Insurance Companies of Hartford, Connecticut, their agents and their employees throughout the country bring you Voices and Events 1951. The sounds and the voices you are about to hear all are real, recorded on the scene of major news events by NBC reporters throughout the world. These sounds and these voices made the high spots in the news during 1951. And here to bring them to you is...
Nine, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You may recall that late this year, educational authorities in Los Angeles gave a simple test to 14,000 high school students. They discovered that an astonishing percentage were unable to tell the time of day. Listen to this young lady.
Well, maybe I don't know how to tell time yet. So what? My folks won't give me a watch till I graduate anyway.
Young lady, whoever you are not alone.
Everywhere, like, such as...
The email threat that swiftly closed LA's entire public school system Tuesday has been made public. The email supports NYPD Commissioner Bill Bratton's quick call that the threat was a hoax.
Email that was received in New York City, which is... similar and almost exactly the same as received in other locales, specifically Los Angeles, that we do not see that as a credible terrorist threat, and we are investigating it as a hoax.
However, about 640,000 Los Angeles students saw classes called off for the day. Bratton said New York received the same email as Los Angeles, with only the locations changed. He called the City of Angels shutdown a significant overreaction. The most obvious mistake was that the email's author, a supposed jihadist, spelled Allah with a lowercase a. Los Angeles officials defended the swift action, with LAPD Chief Charlie Beck saying it is, quote, very easy in hindsight to criticize a decision based on factors the decider could never have known.
I think it was a great idea. I mean, if there's any... there's any threat, I think it's great that he's protecting our children. I know people are giving him flack, but I think Cortina's stepped it up, and for once, I think LAUSD did a really great decision, made a really great decision.
The email begins by saying, quote, something big is going down, something very big. It will make national headlines, perhaps even international ones, end quote. It details information about the sender, where the bombs will be placed, and calls for citizens to pray to Allah.
Mama pajama, she rolled out of bed. Mama pajama, she ran to the police station. When the cop found out, he began to shout. When the cop found out, he started the investigation. It's against the law. It's against the law. What mama saw. Mama looked down and spit on the ground. Mama looked down every time a name got mentioned. And the cop said, oi, forget that boy. And the cop said, oi, I'm gonna stick him in the house of detention. I'm on my way. I don't know where I'm going. I'm on my way. Taking my time and I don't know where. And goodbye, Rosie, Queen Corona. Seeing me and Julio down by the schoolyard. Me and Julio down by the schoolyard. Days, they're gonna take me away. In a
regular days, but the press let the story leak, and the radical priest came to get me released, and the radical priest, we was all on the cover of Newsweek. I'm on my way, I don't know where I'm going, I'm on my way, I'm taking my time and I don't know where, and goodbye Rosie,
the Queen of Corona,
seeing me and Julio down by the schoolyard, me and Julio down by the schoolyard.
This year, we Americans learned that we have nurtured a new major industry almost without knowing it. This industry pays no taxes, responds to no government authority. How could this happen? One answer came from a St. Louis citizen. His name is James Carroll. He calls himself a betting commissioner. Listen to him as he testifies before the Kefauver Crime Committee.
I think gambling is a biological necessity for certain types. I think it is the quality that gives substance to their daydream.
Perhaps that was part of the answer. In a hard, practical world, we Americans are spending too much time on our daydreams. We discovered that the gambling industry is run by shrewd, practical men. Men like Frank Erickson, who was brought out of a New York prison to testify before the Kefauver Committee.
I refuse to answer on the grounds of my intent to incriminate me.
Was it $169,000, 1948?
I refuse to answer on the grounds of my intent to incriminate me.
Well, you don't want to change your mind and really tell us some information which would be very useful for you, to you, Mr. Harris.
I have no information to be useful.
One by one, like Damon Runyon characters, they came before the Kefauver Committee and astounded and shocked the nation's huge radio and television audience. We heard such unlikely names as Dandy Phil Castell and Greasy Thumb Guzik. Here, too, was Joe Adonis, reputedly a big shot in Murder Incorporated.
I decline to answer that question, Senator, on the grounds it might tend to incriminate me.
Mr. Adonis, were you ever
partner
or have any interest in the Piping Rock Casino at Saratoga?
I decline to answer that question, Senator, on the grounds it might tend to incriminate me.
The Kefauver hearings became a great public spectacle. In New York City, the show reached its dramatic climax with the appearance of one Frank Costello. He came to testify with a bad cold and an air of defiance. The television cameras were told to avoid his face, so they played over his twitching hands.
Under no condition will I testify from herein until I'm well enough.
You refuse to testify further?
Absolutely. Mr. Halley, am I a defendant in this courtroom?
No.
Am I under arrest?
No.
Mr. Halley, all due respect to the Senate, which I have an awful lot of respect for, I'm not going to answer another question. You just says I'm not under arrest and I'm going to walk out.
The evidence indicated that Frank Costello was head man in a nationwide gambling syndicate. It was the aim of committee counsel Rudolph Halley to show the close relations between gamblers and politicians. Deftly, with disarming amiability, he led Costello to his point.
Well, you believe it or not, I've met these people, had drinks with them, but I absolutely divorced myself from any participating in politics.
Well, you've continued to associate very closely with a great many people in politics, haven't you?
Well, I don't know if you call it associate. If I meet them, I'll talk to them, and they talk to me, and we'll have a drink or something.
Well, you had two of them up to your home for Thanksgiving dinner last Thanksgiving, didn't you?
Well, I've known them for over 30 years.
And,
But we never spoke politics.
Friday, a New York judge ruled that daily fantasy sports companies FanDuel and DraftKings can no longer operate in the state, in what could be a crippling blow to the fast-growing multi-billion dollar industry. New York Supreme Court Justice Manuel Mendez granted an injunction sought by Attorney General Eric Schneiderman after hearing arguments last month, over whether daily fantasy sports games amounted to illegal games of chance or lawful ones involving skill. A lawyer for DraftKings said the company would immediately be filing for a stay of the decision and plans to appeal the ruling.
I wanna hold them like they do in Texas, please. Fold them, let them hit me, raise it, baby, stay with me. Love game, intuition, play the cards with spades to start. And after he's been hooked, I'll play the one that's on his heart. Oh. I'll get him hot, show him what I've got. Oh, 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 oh. I'll get him hot, show him what I've got. Can't read my, can't read my, no, he can't read my poker face. He's got me like nobody. Poker face, papa, poker face. Oh, that's good. Papa, poker face, papa, poker face. I wanna roll with him, my heart, where we will be. A little gambling is fun when you're with me. Russian roulette is not the same without a gun. And baby, when it's love, if it's not rough, it isn't fun. Oh, 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 I'll get him hot, show him what I've got. I want you to know. Oh, 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 I'll get him hot, show him what I've got. Do you ever play hard to get?
Yes.
Yes. And if you don't, you should. I won't tell you that I love you, kiss or hug you, cause I'm bluffing with my muffin. I'm not lying, I'm just stuttering with my love glue gunning. Just like a check in the casino, take your bank before I pay you out. I promise this, promise this. Check the sign, cause I am marvelous. I'm marvelous, I'm marvelous, I'm marvelous, so marvelous. Can't read my, he can't read my poker. Now will you clap with me? A ba 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 poker, he can't read my poker. A ba 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 poker, he can't read my poker. A ba 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 poker face.
The Kefauver hearings threw the spotlight on what was to become, before the year was out, our most striking domestic issue. Here was not merely a matter of economics or politics. Here was a moral problem. Dubious moral practices, intensely shocking to all honest citizens, ran through the warp and woof of our national life like corrupting threads. The threads were thin, but they seemed to threaten the basic soundness of our national life. Why, for example, had the growing use of narcotics become such a problem? Narcotic agent Charles Siragusa gave one answer when he was asked how much a kilogram of heroin cost at its point of origin in Italy.
In Italy, when I was there, the clandestine price ranged from 1,000 to 1,500 American dollars for a kilo.
How much does a kilo usually sell for in this country?
Well, when the kilo's first brought into New York City, It may get as high as $6,000 wholesale price.
And out of a kilo, they could make a million pills or doses?
I'd say about a million capsules.
Making that into a million capsules, $2 a piece, would make about $2 million for an original investment, $1,500 to $1,000.
Yes, sir, the profit's tremendous.
The profit is so tremendous that illicit drug dealers create markets for their merchandise, even among children. Listen to the testimony of this woman, herself a drug addict, who turned to crime, prostitution, and selling drugs to children just to get money to satisfy her craving.
What do you think of the statement that only 154 school children are using drugs?
No, that's definitely not true. I'm no over that amount myself, and it's got worse than last year. There seems to be more young children using it, and unfortunately, I've sold myself to young children. I know for a fact.
How old were they?
17, 18 years old.
You know any younger than that who are using it?
Yes, girls 12 and 13 years old, smoking marijuana, taking benzodiazepines, smoking hashish, opium, sniffing heroin and cocaine.
All new at 11, and look at three people police say were involved in a heroin deal near a Muncie Pizza Hut. Among those charged, a restaurant employee. RTV6's Chance Walser has more from Delaware County.
Saturday afternoon, police say two adults and an undercover officer pulled up to this Pizza Hut to make an order of sorts. According to the Delaware County Sheriff, the plan was for 25-year-old Jennifer Ailes and 31-year-old Troy Little to buy heroin from Pizza Hut employee 26-year-old Jade Voiles. The sheriff says Ailes and Little waited in a vehicle for Voiles to go on break. Also in the car was that undercover officer and Ailes' 6-year-old son. Police say Voiles sold the couple $150 worth of heroin. Minutes later, they were both arrested during a traffic stop while Voiles was arrested at the Pizza Hut. All three suspects face preliminary charges of dealing and possession of narcotics. The two alleged purchasers could also face charges after police say they found two syringes in their car. And Ailes could potentially face a fourth charge of neglect of a dependent. Chance Walser, RTV6.
Now tonight we are hearing from Pizza Hut corporate offices about Voiles' arrest. They write, the employee involved in this isolated incident was arrested and subsequently immediately terminated by the local franchise owner. The actions violate every company code of conduct, and the local ownership group is cooperating with law enforcement on that investigation.
Get up around 7, get out of bed around 9, and I don't worry about nothing, no, cause words are a waste of my time. Show usually starts around 7, we always age around 9, get on a bus about 11, sipping a drink and feeling fine. We've been dancing with Mr. Brownstone. He's been knocking and he won't leave me alone. No, 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 won't leave me alone. I used to do a little but a little won't do it, so a little got more in my wall. I just keep trying to get a little better, said a little better than before. I used to do a little but a little won't do it, so a little got more in my wall. Just keep trying to get a little better, and a little better than before. We've been dancing with Mr. Brownstone. He's been knocking and he won't leave me alone. No, 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 I won't leave me alone. Now I get up around whenever I used to get up on time, but I don't mind, he's a real motherfucker, I'm gonna kick him out down the line. I used to do a little but a little won't do it, so a little got more and more. I just keep trying to get a little better, said a little better than before. for a while. I used to do a little, but a little won't do it, so I never got far in my wall. I just keep trying to get a little better, said a little better than before. We've been dancing with Mr. Brownstone. He's been knocking and he won't leave me alive. No, 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 I won't leave me alone.
We Americans had any number of things to worry about this year, not the least of them, high prices. Here, with the story of our economic muddle in 1951, is one of NBC's top Washington correspondents, Leif Eade.
I suppose that if you had buttonholed the average Joe citizen on Main Street, USA, and asked him what he thought about the economic situation in 1951, he'd have answered you, "These prices, they're terrible." He would have agreed with this southern housewife.
Well, I think you feel sort of lost when you come into shop. You see everything that's so high and you can't buy any of it. And you wonder why. And the average housewife doesn't know why things are so high.
Would you say that your grocery buying habits have changed a great deal over the last few months?
Considerably. I don't buy beef now. I buy very little veal. I buy no lamb. Any of the things that you really need that are so expensive. You buy pork and hot dogs and hamburger and beans, things that'll fill in.
Yet in the last half of 1951 particularly, OPS had very little to do. Some prices had hit ceiling and were threatening to break through. But a lot of other prices were below ceiling. And the old-fashioned law of supply and demand was setting those prices. But controls, even though weakened somewhat, were continued. Why? Because men in charge of defense mobilization still feared the explosive danger of inflation that might come of piling production of guns on top of production of butter. Mobilization Chief Charles E. Wilson, for instance.
What about our economy in the face of such expansion, such expenditures, such use of material? How do we keep it from running away? There is only one answer. Controls. I hate the word, and so do you. But there is no other way. Voluntary methods will not work.
In the restless economy of America in 1951, there was still plenty of complaint about controls. From business, in the person of Emerson Schmidt, the chief economist for the United States Chamber of Commerce.
Price controls tend to discourage production. They tend to distort production. They tend to encourage black markets, and they have a serious effect on moral standards where they substantially fix prices below market levels.
From organized labor in the person of George Meany of the American Federation of Labor.
We are today confronted with a price order which amounts to legalized robbery of every American consumer, together with a wage order which denies justice and fair play to every American who works for wages.
All this criticism was a result, probably, of too long delayed return to what we consider normal. In 1951, we took on, in addition, a gigantic task of rearmament. But men in Washington still felt and feel that given a break or two, we can carry this gigantic job to a successful end, then toss controls into the ash can, and with greater production of all kinds, carry both loads, guns for the military, butter for the civilians, without another inflationary explosion.
You could blame it on a rash of weather events around the globe, or even the low Canadian dollar. Whatever the reason, it's no secret that food prices have risen steadily over the years, and a recent study says that that expensive trend will continue into 2016. Carolyn Doris is a nutritionist with the Peterborough County City Health Unit. She says our reliance on imported food contributes to the problem.
Over 80% of our fresh produce is imported.
That's a habit Doris says is easy to change. In addition to buying locally, Doris suggests skipping imported, out-of-season produce in favor of frozen or canned Ontario produce. Doris says it's a cheaper option, but no less nutritious.
Move a couple of aisles over in the grocery store to the frozen vegetable aisle, where there's amazing Ontario-grown and Canadian-grown frozen cauliflower that was picked up at the prime of the season last summer.
Sherry Lamachurie runs the website Simply Helpful, a service that offers everything from personal shopping to home staging and menu planning. She says there's one big no-no when it comes to the grocery store.
Convenience foods. Because it's quick, no one has time these days.
Lamachurie says that taking a little extra time to plan is crucial if we're stretching a food budget.
Using what you have and kind of thinking ahead, making a plan, like menu planning, having a good list, taking the time to go over the flyers, see what's on special, and plan your menus around that.
And like the health unit, she recommends buying local, in-season produce and cutting out the high prices associated with imported goods.
I would expect that this winter that our prices will not go up.
Buying locally has already helped the community butcher stave off an increase in prices, which are then passed on to the consumer. The store has been in business for about a year, and owner Scott Walsworth says all their meat comes from farms within 50 kilometers of Peterborough, and that's helped protect them from the sinking loonie.
The farms we're buying from are small enough that most of them are growing their own feed, so they're not purchasing feed from the U.S. either.
Walsworth says the practice also helps ensure that he's buying animals that are ethically raised and free from antibiotics. And he says that's a difference his customers appreciate.
Seems like everybody's got a price. I wonder how they sleep at night. When the sale comes first and the truth comes second, just stop for a minute and smile. Why is everybody so serious? Acting so damn mysterious. Got your shades on your eyes and your heels so high, you can't even have a good time. Everybody look to the left, everybody look to the right. Can you feel that all we're paying with love tonight? It's not about the money, money, money. We don't need your money, money, money. We just wanna make the world dance. Forget about the price tag. Ain't about the cha-ching. We need to take it back in time, when music made us all unite. And it wasn't low blows, but with a video hose. Am I the only one getting tired? Why is everybody so obsessed, when money can't buy us happiness? Can we all slow down and enjoy right now? Guarantee we'll be feeling all right. Everybody look to the left, everybody look to the right. Can you feel that we're paying with love tonight? It's not about the money, money, money. We don't need your money, money, money. We just want to make the world dance. Forget about the price tag. Ain't about the cha-ching, cha-ching. Ain't about the
This was the year the United States took on the job of rearming not only itself, but the entire Western world. W.W. Chaplin has covered that story from the beginning of the year to the end. Mr. Chaplin.
This year, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization became more than a paper organization. A beginning was made toward transforming it into a formidable military organization. But, and this is a big but, it was only a beginning. The man chosen to head the NATO armies was General Dwight D. Eisenhower. Early in the year, immediately following his appointment, he took off for a flying tour of the NATO capitals in Europe.
I believe that this movement, among the Western democracies in which I now have been assigned a post, is one for the preservation of peace and nothing else. If it has a belligerent purpose or attitude, no one has expressed that to me, and I would think it would be defeated from the start. I'm leaving here at noon on Saturday to make an exploratory trip. I hope to visit every capital of every nation. And among the purposes of that visit will be to reassure myself that I am not working at cross purposes with anybody, but that in every capital is shared my belief in what we're trying to do, and my convictions as to what must be done if it's to be a success.
I was the only reporter who accompanied General Eisenhower through every stop of that frenzied tour. France, Belgium, England, the Low Countries, Scandinavia, Italy, and Luxembourg. In the larger capitals, there was carefully planned communist opposition to NATO and to Ike, but it melted to a mere muted snarl under the overwhelming cheers of the vast majority. I think Ike started that tour with crossed fingers, but he ended it with full confidence that the West would rally to his leadership. General Eisenhower returned home to find a great debate in progress over the extent of America's role in world preparedness. Listen to Senator Hickenlooper sparring with Secretary of State Dean Acheson during the hearings.
Well, I'm trying to find out whether this is only the camel getting its head under the tent, and whether the four divisions will require six more, and then the ten will require 12 more, and where we're going, what we have to look forward to. I'm wondering where the end of this matter is, and whether or not, in the long run, we will be put into the inevitable position of assuming the primary responsibility for the land defense of Europe.
Well, Senator, I think you're asking me quite impossible questions. I don't know. Well, in the first place, you say, are we going to be asked to take over the land defense of Europe? The answer is, of course we're not going to be asked to take over the land defense of Europe. If you ask me whether in the future you may be asked to send more than six divisions, how can I possibly answer that? I suppose if there's war, you will. Maybe if the situation gets better, it will be less. Maybe if it stays the same, it'll be the same. Maybe if it gets more tense, there may be some additions to it. This is quite out of my field. I'm not able to tell you.
The administration defined this as a military problem, but that did nothing to mitigate congressional opposition to Secretary Acheson. The late Senator Wherry, a casualty of the year, was one of those most strongly opposed.
A large percentage of the people know, in view of the present precarious international situation, with its terrific impact upon our domestic economy, that Dean Acheson has failed miserably as Secretary of State. The Republican members of the Senate and House adopted a resolution saying, Mr. Acheson has lost the confidence of the American people, and Mr. Acheson must go.
As the year ends, Secretary Acheson still holds office, and friends of the administration may point to our growing strength as evidence that his policies are paying off. Part of that growing strength is in the increased potential of our atomic weapons. What you are hearing now is the actual sound of an atomic explosion early this year in the Nevada desert. This dramatic explosion rocked the walls of Las Vegas gambling houses. It broke windows and crockery, but the men of the American Far West are sturdy men, not easily perturbed even by an atomic bomb. Here is this one.
Well, I was making my rounds about 5:45. Got a blinding flash in the eye, and I batted my eyes about like a toad would in a hailstorm. I raised my head and looked up to the west and north, and I see a big white sheet hanging in the sky, so I just surmised then that that must be the atomic bomb.
Following the Nevada atom tests, there was guarded talk of atomic artillery and of other secret atomic weapons suitable for tactical use on the battlefield. We were cautioned that such developments are still some time off. Our actual battle strength is still in conventional weapons and in the foot soldiers who use them. The growing NATO force in Europe is still small in numbers, but it is well-equipped and physically hard. These are maneuvers near the Czechoslovakian border. The men who covered them for us are Charlie and Gene Jones, the fabulous TV cameraman.
The sergeant is giving some orders to his tank crew.
Range, 1-200. Tank. Fire.
Our M26 tank, mounting a 90mm rifle, has just opened fire upon the aggressive forces. That's our 50 caliber atop the tank, opening fire. The aggressive forces are dispersing. We're laying down a very fine field of fire on the aggressive forces. Here comes one of our troopers now. He's coming over. What is your name, buddy?
Private Hill.
What out for the end, Private?
First Division.
What do you think about the situation? Is the division ready?
Well, we're pretty close to the Czechoslovakia border, and I think if they ever came over here, the Russians, We'd give them a good battle, just like they are over in Korea.
Here at home, for the first time in history, we sent troops in after an atomic explosion. They were astonished, perhaps, but unafraid.
We were seated on the ground and told to face away from the blast. From the time we saw the flash, it was about 25 seconds till we heard the blast. They counted off the seconds and then said, bombs away. It was a terrific blast. I've never seen anything like it in my life. It was really something to see. The clouds started when you first seen the fireball, the clouds sort of looked like a donut and rose up and spread out all over and drifted over by us. Well, I couldn't say how high, but it must have been a mile wide anyway.
As this year ends, it could be said that the most notable fact is a negative one.
A new world order.
We needed a new world order.
A new order of the ages.
In creating the kind of world order that I think all of us would like to see.
Lightning in my bones, it pushed me to the edge, but my will is strong. 'Cause I believe in a better way. Fools will be fools and wise will be wise, but I will look this world straight in the
to be infected with Ebola without having to leave your own home or deal with other people? Well, you might be in luck. You can already download an Ebola virus genome right here on the internet right now. And if you're willing to wait a few years for 3D bioprinting technology to progress a little bit. You can just acquire one then, submit the genome to it, and ta-da, all you can print, Ebola. Or anthrax. Or whatever it is you wish to mass produce at home to wipe out humanity. Are humans going to go extinct soon? Will human extinction be anthropogenic? That is, the result of human action. Or will it be one of the good old-fashioned kinds of extinction Earth's history knows pretty well? The Global Catastrophic Risks Survey, issued by Oxford University's Future of Humanity Institute, placed our risk of extinction before the year 2100 at 19%. Now you might be thinking, whatever, blah blah blarmageddon, it'll be okay. Humans are too smart to go extinct. Maybe you're right. But it's difficult to predict the distant future with a lot of certainty. What's really cool, though, is that if you embrace that uncertainty, a simple argument can show that human extinction soon is actually more probable. It's called the doomsday argument. Imagine a giant urn that contains either 10 balls numbered 1 to 10 or a million balls numbered 1 to a million. Now, you don't know which is the case, but you are allowed to pull out one ball. You go ahead and do that, and it is ball number 4. That's pretty strong evidence in favor of the 10-ball condition, because drawing a 4 from a set of 1 through 10 is a 1 in 10 chance, but drawing 4 from a million different numbers is a 1 in a million chance. By analogy, you are also a numbered ball. You are a human who knows approximately what your birth number is. It's probably somewhere around 100 billion. That's how many other humans were most likely born before you were. Importantly, you didn't get to decide which birth number you would have. So, just like the number 4 ball, you are a random sample from the set of all humans who will ever live. The doomsday argument points out that from 200 billion people, there's a 50% chance that a randomly chosen person, like you, would be born in the first 100 billion. Whereas if there will be 10 trillion humans, there's only a 1% chance that any given human, say you, would happen to be born within the first 100 billion. Either you are special and lucky to be born so improbably early in the story of humanity, or your birth number is to be expected. Because there will not be tens of trillions of humans, human extinction will be sooner rather than later. But before you become too convinced that the end is nigh, keep in mind that the doomsday argument is not uncontroversial. One problem it might have is a reference class problem. Are you really a random sample from the set of all humans who will ever be born? Well, if you believe that in the not-so-distant future, humans will be quite different than they are today. For instance, they'll be full of more 3D-printed organs. The mere fact that right now there aren't very many humans with that trait could be evidence that you aren't a random sample from the set of all humans, just from the set of all humans like you. Like those around you, those born earlier in human history. Also, the doomsday argument doesn't consider the likelihoods of actual threats or human advantages over those threats in the future. It just assumes that we don't know which way the balance will lie, that human extinction soon and human extinction later are equally likely. But maybe you don't believe that. Maybe you are convinced that human ingenuity will always stay one step ahead of any extinction event thrown at it. You could be right. But there's reason to doubt that optimism. For example, the Fermi paradox. If it is likely that intelligent life forms in our universe are capable of living for billions and billions of years, Where are they? Why are the skies so silent? Perhaps it is because extinction-level threat events are just too common for intelligent life anywhere to ever catch up. So, does this mean we should just give up? The Voluntary Human Extinction Movement thinks so. Founded in 1991, its supporters believe that humans are a negative influence on Earth, and always will be. Thus, we have a moral obligation to just stop reproducing right now and fade away. But what would a computer do? In a way, that's kind of what Tom Seven did. He created a program that plays video games. The program came up with novel techniques and strategies for playing games and even exploited glitches humans didn't know about, or at least hadn't told it about. He also had the program play other games, like Tetris, which I think is relevant to our question. The computer struggled to figure out what to do. You see, the computer wasn't programmed to consider future repercussions far enough ahead to notice that stacking tetraminos in certain ways made a big difference. On one run, when faced with imminent demise, the computer did something eerie. Rather than lose and receive a game over, it just paused the game. Forever. Tom Seven describes the computer's reasoning like this: the only winning move is to not play. And that's right. If you pause a game forever, you will never lose that game. But you'll also never win that game or achieve a high score. Now, we might not know what achieving a sentient life high score in this universe means, or whether or not we're capable of achieving one. We might also sometimes panic when the future looks bleak. But if we keep playing and keep learning, chances are we could eventually figure it out and start playing really well.
Looking for the perfect world.
Perfect world.
Looking for the perfect world.
Looking for the perfect world.
Moving the opponent in a chess game. TV ratings moving up, it's the best game. Moving the opponent in a chess game. TV ratings moving up, it's the best. Moving up, it's moving up. Moving up, it's the best. It's moving up, it's moving up. Men with suits and ties, sitting for shots. Men with suits and ties, sit. Men with suits and ties, sitting for shots. Shots, call shots from a chair. With hummus coming at night, with dark light.
More drama looking through the sunroof at a show party.
With hummus coming at night, with dark light.
More drama looking through the sunroof at a show party.
With heavy equipment, journalists ask me questions with armor. With questions with armor. No compass, no direction, no choice to sleep. With no selection, music bumping.
Looking for the perfect world. Perfect world. Looking for the perfect world. Perfect world.
Moving the opponent in a chess game. TV ratings moving up, it's the best game. Moving the opponent in a chess game. TV ratings moving up, it's moving up, moving up, moving up, moving up, moving up, moving up, moving up. Best game. Moving up, moving up.
Watch the contract.
My fears are painkillers and
the perfect world, perfect world. Looking for the perfect world, perfect world.
Very powerful stuff. What more do you want?
Thank you.
Now, go find the others. .com.
We gotta spread this stuff around. Let's put it on the internet.